Hey out there, old movie fans. It's time again for a movie retrospective. Doing one from 1988 today, directed by the legendary Wes Craven.
Yeah.
This is The Serpent and the Rainbow.
I saw this when it came out, right when it first came out. And I didn't remember thinking it was bad, but I didn't really remember thinking it was all that good either. Mm-hmm. I saw it. We rented it, I think, on VHS. And I watched it and I was like, yeah, all right. You know, just kind of chuckled it off. I forgot all about it. I saw it again, you know, with you just the other night. It was good. Real good.
See, I told you.
It was just, I guess, you know, when I saw it, I was young and I was just more into, well, that's not Terminator. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, every movie but Terminator is not Terminator. So did you like every movie you watched? Yeah. You're like, man, not like, Terminator.
That's not Predator.
Bye.
Yeah. Is Arnie in this shit?
No. Okay. Fuck that movie. Yeah, Who needs movies?
Bruce Willis in this? That's before Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis was still on TV at that point.
Yeah, he didn't really get famous as an action hero until Die Hard.
Die Hard, yeah.
Yeah, he had just been like a comedian on TV.
Yeah, and I saw Die Hard and I was like, fuck, man, that's a good movie.
That's what everyone thought. Yeah. They're like, hey, who knew?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny now because like as people that weren't born back then, and you've always known like Bruce Willis as an action star, he did not start out that way.
No, he was like a guy.
And it was kind of like a bit, and people were like, what the fuck? What is he doing in this movie? That's going to suck. And then they were like, oh, okay, never mind.
Yeah, well, you know, action movie hero was like Stallone or...
Well, yeah. He was like a big buff guy.
Dude, he could whip your ass, you know what I mean? Then they show Bruce Willis and people start laughing.
Yeah. They did at the time, I remember.
Oh, come on. But then the movie was so good that they're like, oh, okay, yeah.
Well, because he was more of an everyman character.
Yeah, but he survived some fucking impossible shit.
Well, yeah, but you know.
It was just still a cool movie.
So anyway.
It changed the action movie genre.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, pretty much single-handedly. Single-moviedly, I guess.
Yeah, because before that, you know, he was just some dude you'd see on a sitcom.
Yeah,
he was kind of like the equivalent, I don't know. Yeah, wasn't even a James Bond type guy. He was just a dude. You know? It'd be like saying Jerry Seinfeld. Jerry Seinfeld's gonna fucking fight
Isn't
on
that
his
funny
tennis.
If Bruce Willis got that on his tombstone? Just a dude.
Just this dude, yeah. Well, at first he was just
more
like,
people should have that on their tombstone.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's how he started.
I don't know why I thought of that.
That's how he started out. He was just kind of generic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, okay. So the thing about Serpent and the Rainbow, I might have seen it in the theater, because I was going to the movies a lot around this time, but maybe I didn't, but I saw it probably, if I didn't see it in the theater, then I saw it probably a year or two after it came out, like on VHS, like you did. Now, I actually taped it off cable, and I kept it, and like, I watched it a lot of times, because I really, really dug it, but then I didn't watch it for ages, and then recently, when Shudder put it up, I was like, oh, we need to do that movie because it's been on my list and shit like that because it was one that I remembered really liking. And it was actually, I mean, I liked it at the time, but it was much better than I remembered.
Yeah.
So this is actually, this is the movie that Wes Craven directed after the unfortunate Deadly Friend. Although I loved that movie when I was younger. It's terrible, but in kind of an endearing way, I guess.
This movie made a lot more sense than I remembered it making.
Yeah.
I didn't remember it making much sense. I was like, what the fuck is this thing doing? You know, like, what is that? Why'd that happen? I didn't know much about, you know, voodoo lore. And I really couldn't follow it.
Yeah, this is when
it's its own thing.
You kind of have to pay attention to what they're talking about and like what's going on.
Yeah, and you know, at that time, this was a very innovative movie, so we weren't really you know accustomed to storytelling like this. I think
it's almost like a throwback because it's technically it's a zombie movie, but it's more a zombie movie in the sense of like. In the 1940s, you know what I mean? Like, I watched this where all the zombies were, you know, based around Haitian voodoo lore. You know, it was just in the 1968, obviously, with Night of the Living Dead, that zombies became, like, flesh-eating ghouls and everything like that. Prior to that, the only thing about a zombie was that they were... It was Haitian. Like, you brought them back, and they were slaves and whatnot.
And
so this kind of was, like, a throwback to that.
And I don't really like the title. I don't think that title is catchy enough to really catch the attention of... You know, at least me when I was the age that I saw this, which I was late teens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It should have been Serpent in the Rainbow. It just doesn't sound like an exciting horror movie. It should have been something more like black people scare shit out of this white dude. That should have been a
white dude gets scared by black men.
Yeah. Something like that, you know?
Well, okay, so
black people fucking this white dude over. Should have been.
Well, not all of them did.
I know that.
But you know,
it was cool though. Kind of like the setting is kind of like a James Bond setting. You know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
I guess
like,
so.
Remember that? Was it Man with the Golden Gun where they had the voodoo priest?
Was it Man with the Golden Gun or was it? I think it was.
Which one was
it? Maybe it was You Only Live Twice. Was it You Only Live Twice?
Yeah, something like that.
It was one of them too.
Yeah, it kind of had that feel to it because that's the only thing I could really associate it with.
Yeah.
You know? But then after a while, it's its own thing. It's pretty good.
Yeah, this is, so if you didn't know, I mean, it's called The Serpent and the Rainbow because that's what the book is called. And the book was actually nonfiction, written by ethnobotanist Wade Davis, who went down to Haiti in 1985 and was studying some of the different poisons and was studying this quote unquote zombie powder and was like figuring out what was in it and, how it was used to make zombies, not in the sense that they were killing a person and bringing them back from the dead, obviously, but how they were making it appear that the person was dead and then bringing them back and how they were keeping the person enslaved. You know what I mean?
Yeah. In like a a drugged out stupor.
Right.
You know, that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
This dude goes down there trying to figure out the secret of it, you know, and hooks up with this guy who's kind of like a shyster. Not real trustworthy, and he's going to sell him the recipe. That's evidently how it went. But in the end, they become buddies. And the story is pretty cool. You know, you got the head of a secret police organization who's representing this dictatorship, and he's just this evil-looking fucker, man. You see him,
he's so good in this.
Yeah, he does a great
job. He's so scary.
Does a great job.
That dude is so scary.
And not only can he torture you, and he had to sick the secret police on you, he's also going to steal your soul.
Yeah.
Make you zombies and stuff, man. Pretty cool.
Yeah,
he's got a whole vials of fucking zombies. He's got a whole vial full of... He's got a room with a bunch of vials and vases, I guess would be the way.
Yeah, I think they're called Kanati. They have souls in them.
But the souls of the trapped in there, you know.
Because he's a Bokor.
Yeah, he's Bokor.
He's like a black magic.
Yeah, and then he's got a lieutenant who's... when you first see him, he's in the top hat and tails with a skull mask. I said, man, I gotta get my buddy that outfit.
Like your Baron Samedi
type
of.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And, you know, they're just he's trying to get the secret. They're trying to kick him out of the country and bad shit ensues. He meets this kind of mixed chick she's a doctor, wasn't she?
She's a doctor, yeah.
Yeah, she's a doctor. And, you know, he colonizes it. I'm not gonna say he colonized it. I'm gonna say he more like gentrified it.
Well, thank you for making that distinction.
He gentrified it. It was pretty cool. And man, you know, he's trying to save her and she's trying to help him and Jenny will tell you all the details. That was the man short story. Short version.
That was the man short.
That was the short version.
The ADD man short
version.
Yeah,
that was a testosterone infused version of the story.
Oh dear. All right. So, like I said, the interesting thing about this was that, so I guess like after the Wade Davis book came out, and like I said, obviously all the shit that happens in the movie, because the movie kind of takes like a supernatural sort of turn. Which obviously the book did not, because it was, you know, a work of serious anthropology where he went down there and studied the drugs and stuff. So they just kind of use that as a jumping off point. Now, one thing that I didn't know until I was like kind of researching this movie was that Wade Davis, he agreed to sign off the rights to make a fiction movie of the book, but only if Peter Weir directed it and Mel Gibson starred in it. And I don't think it would have worked with Mel Gibson in it. I'm just saying that right now.
At that time, Mel Gibson had a hell of a box office draw.
He did, but
and
it's
everybody
like,
wanted him to be in their movies.
Can you imagine?
That's another one that kind of became an action guy by accident.
Yeah.
Because Mel Gibson and Bruce Willis were real similar physically. You know what I mean? Just kind of average guys. It's just kind of funny how that went down. And then somehow Harrison Ford got thrown in with them with the Patriot Games. And remember, he was playing a secret CIA agent?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you imagine though, like Mel Gibson like running around Haiti like trying to have a zombie powder and he'd just be like cracking jokes and everything? It just would have been a totally different movie, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Cussing out Jews and stuff.
Yeah, well, like yeah, that's what I mean. And it's like he'd have been cussing out everybody. It's like it's his stupid horrible ass but he did in there. Jesus Christ. I don't think that would have worked at all. But yeah, so now so
okay, it, Mel.
Yeah, Mel.
Oh, he can make a good movie though, I mean.
He can't.
Apocalypto
well,
is fucking
sometimes. Yeah, I really do like Apocalypto. Yeah. And I feel like that doesn't get talked about a lot.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though that's a kick-ass movie. I feel like this movie, like I said, even though it takes a supernatural turn and it's very much based in reality, it actually is one of the few movies that actually takes voodoo seriously as the religion that it is. You know what I mean? It doesn't make it... You know what I mean? It doesn't make it like, oh, it's all bad, or oh, it's you know what I mean? It's very, very grounded in people actually.
Went to one of those things when I was a kid. You know,
it was Macumba, though.
Macumba,
wasn't it?
Yeah, in Brazil. Yeah. A friend of mine was a taxi driver, and he had to go. You know, we were hanging out, and he's like, man, I got to go to church. And I said, what church are you going to? It turned out he was talking about Macumba church.
Yeah.
So I said, mom, take me, let me check it out. He said, I don't know if I should take you. But, you know, I went. You know, you pay to get in, you know, you got to like give like a little offering. It was just church, really.
Yeah.
Church with girls singing, blowing smoke on people, singing at people. You don't really know what's going on. The people are there, you know, to solve different problems, and nobody knows what the problems are. Only the priest knows.
Yeah.
Only thing weird about it, I thought, is when I was walking in, they had some chickens on a big old long spike. It's probably about a 4 foot tall wire. They were dead. You know, they just killed them and...
Yeah.
Put them on that spike. But that's just kind of normal. That's, you know, did the same thing, you know, in Judaism, you know, sacrificing goats and
yeah, that's what
burnt
I mean.
Offerings.
It's, that's why people nowadays think shit. It's weird, but it's really not that weird.
No, it's actually quite traditional. And they don't waste it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they say, well, it's for the spirits. No, it's for the fucking priest.
Yeah.
They go and they eat all that, eat the chicken.
That's why all the priests are fat.
Chicken. It's just food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this actually does take it seriously as a, you know, as a belief system, and it's probably one of the most serious, you know, zombie movies, quote unquote. I mean, others, you also got Angel Heart. I think there was maybe one or two other ones. The Believers, although I guess that was more like a negative thing. But interestingly, so I think in some ways that's what makes this movie like more creepy or like more unsettling is because even though there are fantastical elements, a lot of which are drug-induced, you know what I mean? Like Bill Pullman's character who is having, like, hallucinations and whatnot. But then it's very grounded in reality. I mean, they did actually shoot most of this in Haiti until the political situation started to get kind of out of hand. And, you know, their handlers or whatever said, look, we can't ensure your safety anymore. So you might want to get out of here. And then they ended up having to film the rest of it in the Dominican Republic. And a lot of the stuff that you see, like a lot of the voodoo rituals, like near the beginning of the movie where Dr. Duchamp is, you know, getting up and she's possessed. Those were actually all locals and that was like a real ceremony.
Yeah, they're probably not actors.
So most of the people in this were not actors, you know what I mean? Other than the main one. Like all the people, like the extras and stuff like that, they were all people that were actually from there and they were doing what they did, you know.
Visually,
I mean?
It looks really good.
It's amazing.
You can tell it's not a set, it's authentic. The only thing is that some of the leads that are supposed to be playing Haitians, you can tell it's not really a Haitian accent that they're using. It's fake Haitian, fake French accent. I do like that they were calling the dude Blanc. It was that Blanc?
Yeah, Blanc.
Blanc calling him white.
They call him white.
Yeah, Blanc.
I mean, like, hey, so it's like, hey, white.
I was making jokes to the whole movie about, you know,
them calling him Blanc.
Yeah, and he's putting a Blanc down on that girl.
Right.
Let's all kind of shit like that. It is a fun movie to watch. It did kind of take me back to another time. No CG.
No, of course not.
Just good storytelling and good practical effects.
And there are some really, really, really nice, creepy, like iconic imagery in this.
Yeah, good acting.
I mean, there's that thing with like the creepy like bride and he pulls back the veil and she's like a corpse face and then the snake comes out of her mouth.
Yeah.
You know, there's the one where he's kind of tripping out and he looks out the... you know, across, out of the porch or the door of his beach house, and there's like this boat coming toward him with a corpse on the front, and it's all on fire.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's really, really cool. There's like a lot of, all the candlelight and all
that. Yeah, there's a lot of horror imagery, but it's usually associated with some kind of damn hallucination he's having because he took drugs. But there's also, because they drugged him and tried to turn him into a zombie. Plus, he was also having visions and premonitions because he was coming under psychic attack, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
because the main bad guy, and another interesting thing about this too, and, you know, and they actually were filming this when this was going on, was that this was around the time when there was all the civil unrest. It was all the protests against the dictator, Baby Doc Duvalier. And so actually there's the story of, you know, Bill Pullman's character, whose name is Dennis Allen, but he's based on Wade Davis a little bit, but not, he's more like, I guess he's more like an Indiana Jones kind of character. You know what I mean? He's like an anthropologist type character, like an intellectual.
Yeah.
And, but his story of attempting to get the zombie powder, he's trying to get it for a, you know, a place called BioCorp, which I thought was very funny. It's like, well, that's about what they would name something like that then. So I didn't think it was that like,
back then, yeah.
Yeah, because back then, it's like everybody wanted this like really generic-sounding fucking name. But it's like, so they want to find out what the zombie, because they've heard about this case of this guy named Christophe Durand, who apparently died in 1978, but then was seen walking around again many years later. So they figured out, oh, it was zombie powder, it must be a drug. We need to get our hands on that, how they make that, because we can make that into like a super anesthetic and make like anesthetic a lot safer. So that's why he goes down there to find it. So Christophe Durand is obviously based on a real guy, Clairbius Narcisse, who Wade Davis talked about in his book, who supposedly died, was buried, all that other stuff, and then was brought back, you know, and was enslaved for many years or whatever. So that's like a real case that they base this guy on. Even though, like I said, this one kind of goes in a supernatural direction and the other one doesn't. But so the story of Bill Pullman's character is kind of like analogous to, you know, even like Haiti fighting back against the Duvalier family and them leaving the country, like them being ousted from the country or fleeing the country. Because at the end, when, you know, Bill Pullman like fights the Bokor and like, you know, does the mental thing, like the psychic thing against him and like ends up killing him and stuff and releases all the souls of the people that he had been keeping. That was like, it's like a symbol too for all the people of Haiti who were like released from, you know, the Duvalier, you know, dictatorship. So they definitely like had a parallel going with that type of thing, even though it was, I think even the, in the movie, they even use like real TV footage of Baby Doc Duvalier like fleeing the country. So I think like when you see that, like on those, that's actual footage of that, like actually happening. So there is like a realistic, like a little bit of political thing in it, but mostly, I mean, mostly it's a horror movie, but it's a very serious, grounded horror movie that has like a lot of, like you said, like horrific elements in it. I mean, there's shit like, it's not really, I guess it's not really all that gory. There is a beheading. Well, there's a couple beheadings. One of, but you don't see them. One of them, you just see the aftermath. Bill Pullman does have a nail driven through his scrotum.
Yeah, it's awesome.
but you don't really see, that's a really good scene because the guy that plays, you know, the head of the Tonton Macoute, who's like not only like the head of the military police, but he's also like a Bokor. He's like a black magician and he can like get inside your dreams and like fuck with your head and shit like that.
Yeah.
You know, he's got like Bill Pullman's character like naked and strapped to a chair.
Yeah. When I saw that scene, they drove that nail through the dude's scrotum. They don't actually show it. The camera angled, you know, you can't see it.
Yeah. You can just see his face on it.
Man, that freaked me out when I first saw that.
Well, yeah, you don't see that in a lot.
My reaction was, is at the time, I was like, man, wouldn't that kill you? But now, man, for people we know from the club, we'd have people that would do that to themselves for fun.
That's why, yeah, it wouldn't kill you. It probably wouldn't be all that, you know, it would probably wouldn't be all that fun unless you're into that. But in a way, I think that made it kind of better because, like, the way they just showed his face, because the whole guy was like, I want to hear you scream. Yeah, he's like, so he's, like, trying to scream, like, before he does it, like, how's that? And he's like, not good enough. Yeah. And then he's like, wham!
And then what other movie would you compare this to?
Like I said, it's similar a little bit to Angel Heart. We should probably do that.
I always associate this one. You're gonna think I'm fucking crazy.
Okay.
For some reason, I always associated this one with The Last Temptation of Christ because it happened around the same time. I think I saw them around this.
I remember really liking that movie, but I haven't seen it in a really long time.
For some reason, like tonally, I think it was just because I saw them near each other. But for some reason, you know, I associate those two movies.
Yeah.
Like they're related to each other. Which, that was a good movie too. David Bowie was in it.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, he played Pontius Pilate.
That was the one that had, Willem Dafoe was in that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was like, he played Jesus or whatever.
I haven't seen that one for a long time.
Yeah, I'll have to see that again. I really liked it.
I don't know if it stood out.
I remember there being a humongous controversy.
Oh, when
that came out.
Me and Steve took dates to that movie. We were waiting out long, and there's a long line to get in there.
Yeah.
We got accosted by churches with damn signs.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Like those ones that used to hang out in downtown Orlando.
Nowadays, they didn't want that movie to come out. They didn't want people to see Jesus on the big screen, which is absolutely...
Well, they didn't want to see it because Jesus and Mary Magdalene have sex in that movie, don't they?
Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But I think by today's standards, I think a lot of Christians probably wouldn't even care.
Probably
they would
not.
Just go, yeah, go see Jesus.
Yeah, go see Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, there's Jesus.
I don't know.
I don't think it might
still be, but I don't think it would cause the furor.
But that's kind of that. Some people say that that's kind of implied in maybe possibly the story anywhere. Maybe you could read that into it.
Yeah, but your real hardcore ones don't want to hear that.
You know, with all the Merovingians and the Jesus bloodline coming through Mary. You know what I mean? That's all.
Well, yeah.
That rumors like that are hundreds of years old.
It's a lot more acceptable now, I think, after that Holy Blood. What was the fuck was that name? Was that book? Holy Blood, Holy Grail, Holy Christ, whatever the fuck it was called. I don't remember.
Yeah.
And there was like a whole, like a big thing about that.
Yeah, you have devout Christians going, I hope Jesus' bloodline is still around.
Because that means I could be related.
Yeah. So the... attitudes have really changed about that kind of shit.
A lot, yeah. You still have like some fringe wackos, but you know what I mean. It's not like it was in the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, when Last Temptation of Christ came out, when did that come out? 88, 89,
something like that.
And I remember people were freaking out. Yeah. They were freaking out about this movie.
The best religious movie of all times, though, it's got to be Noah.
He loves Noah.
I love that
one. The Darren Aronofsky one.
That's like some shit straight out of fucking Prometheus.
It's so weird. It's weird. I love it. But I like Darren Aronofsky.
That's what they're talking about, though, in Genesis. That's what they're talking about.
But yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, like I was saying, like this is very much like I said, kind of like Angel Heart, or it reminds me a lot of kind of, maybe in the pacing or kind of the atmosphere of it or something, it kind of reminds me of like some of the, you know, 30s and 40s, like what's like I Walked with a Zombie and White Zombie and stuff like that. A little bit like that, just in the sense that you get the sense of, since they really filmed it in Haiti and they really used like all the locals as extras and they tried to make it as realistic as they could make it within that framework. So you really get a sense of place and you really get a sense of this shit could really happen, kind of, in a way that you don't get from a lot of other horror movies.
That's why I said that it kind of reminded me of a James Bond movie. I mean, James Bond went to Haiti.
Yeah.
But James Bond movies are very location centric.
They are, yeah.
And this movie's like that too, is that because it's actually happening in its proper location, as far as you know, you don't know that they moved the film crew, but, because it all seems to be Haiti. Some of it is Haiti.
Yeah.
And, it just gives that feel to the movie. You could not replicate that tone without actually
filming
being
there.
With actual people, real Haitians.
Yeah.
And real, voodoo people beating on drums and stuff, and you know, having
because look, I mean, some of the like, you know, the
it's almost like a damn documentary.
It is kind of. It has that like look to it, but it's really, I mean, like I said, it's got such great imagery, and it's just like really beautiful. Like everything is just like by candlelight and fire, and then there's just like all these real, like everyone doing the you know, the ceremonies, and all they all have red on, and it's just like, and they're all dancing and like sticking like needles through their cheeks and stuff like that.
Crunching
and
glasses.
Yeah, and there's like this one really gorgeous shot where they're all like it's like a funeral procession, and they're all wearing white, and they're all carrying candles, and they're all just like going like through the, you know, through the fields or whatever, and it's just like this really nice like long shot, but it's just a really, really nice shot. And like I said, this film also not only plays on, I guess, like, you know, various fears of getting a nail put through your scrotum and spiders, snakes, lots of things
like
buried alive. This movie, the one scene in particular where you know, Bill Pullman's character, Dennis Allen, he gets, you know, he gets warned again and again by the Tonton Macoot, you know, get out of Haiti, but he won't go because he needs the zombie powder. And then eventually he leaves, but then he comes back because he has to, save Dr. Duchamp, who he feels is in danger. So at one point, you know, the Bokor has somebody blow the zombie powder on him, which, so, you know, which is another scary thing because the shit like soaks through your skin, right? And then you die, or it looks like you die. You go into a cataleptic state, and then you get buried because everybody thinks you're dead. I mean, even at the beginning, they show like somebody they think is dead. They're like fucking, he's got no heartbeat. Is that they stick a fucking pin like under his eyeball and he doesn't react to it. So obviously they're going to bury you, even though you're still in there and you're still like aware of what's going on, which is horrifying. So that happens to Bill Pullman's character. Like he gets the zombie powder blown on him. And he's like just going around the fucking street, and, you know, he's trying to tell people. It's a very famous, I think even the line is more famous than the movie itself is, or it's gonna, don't let them bury me, I'm not dead, which is really, I saw a review the just earlier today that said that's probably one of the best horror movie taglines, like, ever, where he's got that fucking red cross on his forehead.
It's a good flick.
And then they throw him in a fucking coffin, and there's just these fucking shots. There's, like, the, you know, he's the bottom of the grave, and then, like,
put a tarantula in
and then, like, the creepy dude is up there, like, looking down at him and throwing dirt on there, and then, like, he's, you know, and it's, like, there's just really great, like, images of... Even before that happens to him, like, he has a kind of a vision where he gets, like, thrown into the coffin and then, like, starts filling up with blood and all this other kind of shit. So, I mean, if you're scared of being buried alive, because there's, like, that scene where it actually does happen to him, and then, like, the screen just goes black for several minutes, and then all you can hear is him just, like, breathing and, like, waking up and, like, freaking out and finding out. And, yeah, there's a tarantula in there, like, crawling on his face. But, you know, it's, like... All the effects in this are good. It's like all the acting is really good. You know, it's just a beautiful looking movie. And like I said, it's really one of the few serious, real zombie movies that actually has as a has like a serious backdrop of like, you know, kind of exploration of the lore, you know, in both sides of it. It's like, you know, how it can be used for good or how it can be used for evil. Because one of the guys that helps him is like kind of a good voodoo guy, you know, a Hungan or whatever they call it. You know, so that guy helps him out. So it's not all bad.
The casting was fucking spot on.
It really was. Right, and I love that they put Bill Pullman in this because I think at this point in his career, he had only had two lead roles, maybe. Mm. He was in Spaceballs and one other thing. But he had mostly been a comedic actor.
Yeah.
So I think they kind of really, he's cast a little bit against type, but I think he did a really good job in this.
The guy who played the secret policeman, the Bokor guy, man, his face, his acting, it just sold it
to
me.
He was a terrifying dude.
Yeah, it's like I thought he was just playing himself.
He was in a bunch of other movies.
Yeah. I remember seeing it. When I first saw this as a kid, I was just like, I didn't think that was an actor.
You know, that's just like a real evil voodoo guy that they found and put in the movie.
That. Yeah, he looked like that.
There's just something so
he was.
Intimidating about him. And it's just like, I think it's like his voice. It's just
his
like the
face, his teeth.
Yeah, like the facial expressions that he makes, like the way he carries his body
that. He's basically kind of like, you know, a secret policeman. He's running a secret police squad that's like a death squad, too.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with somebody who's like on the level of like the SS.
That's what I was thinking. It's like the Haitian equivalent of the SS.
And then you have like SS police or something.
Yeah.
And He's got the power of life and death over you. He can kill you or throw you into prison or whatever. And he's a damn sorcerer.
On top of it.
Yeah, he can use drugs and potions. And it's not flim-flam. Dude could get into your dreams, too. You know, he does have paranormal abilities.
Yeah.
It's not fake.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's...
Because there's
hard to beat that.
There's that one. Yeah,
and that's what's happening in a third world country too. This is like some shit.
And Bill Pullman is like, he doesn't really know that many people there.
Basically,
you know what I mean?
If you take this story and put it in a galaxy far, far away, you're talking about Darth Vader.
Yeah.
You know, basically.
Yeah, he is like that. Basically. He is like that.
He's the Haitian Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Or, you know, Thulsa Doom.
Yeah.
From Conan.
He comes across like that too as well. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like he has everything, and so it seems like he seems like an unbeatable foe in a lot of ways because he has magic powers. I mean, there's that one fucking great scene where, like I said, they're trying to get Bill Pullman to leave Haiti, and he won't leave for various reasons. And you know, so he's starting to threaten him, and he just has this great thing where he says, "Oh, Dr. Allen," you know what I mean? He's like, "Did you dream about this, that, and the other?" "No, you dreamed about this and that." He said, "I know, because I was there." Yeah. And it's like, you know what I mean? Because he could, like, and he's like, "And I could be there every time." Like, so he could, like, fuck with your mind, like, forever. And there's even a scene in it, too. Like, after he leaves, after he gets the zombie powder and, like, leaves Haiti the first time, because, like, you know, he has to go back at the end. But after he leaves the first time and he goes back to Boston and he's at a dinner party with his friends, they're, like, celebrating, "Oh, yay, he got the zombie powder," or whatever. So he's, like, with his colleagues. And the woman at the, like, the wife of his colleague or whatever that's at the dinner party, she gets possessed by that guy who's back in Haiti.
Yeah.
Like, she starts freaking out and like, chewing on glass and stuff.
It's kind of a weird dynamic, you know, being an American, you see, like, this happening in a third world setting. These guys got fucked up clothes. They don't hardly have any money. Their government's falling apart. There's no infrastructure. How could this guy really have any true power? No, he's got supernatural power.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And he could, like, he could possess somebody, like, thousands of miles away.
Yeah, that's a damn sophisticated weapon.
Yeah. Okay. And that was one of the things that made, you know, Dr. Allen have to go back to Haiti, because he's like, one, not only was Dr. Duchamp in danger, and he had kind of fallen in love with her over the course of the movie, but also because he understood then, he's like, I can't escape him.
Yeah.
He can get me anywhere, because he can, and that's why he did that, like, why, that's why that guy possessed that girl at the woman at the party, because he wanted to show Dr. Allen, it's like, I could just fuck with you forever if I wanted to.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how far away you are.
Bad English ain't gonna stop him.
That's goddamn right. But yeah, so seriously, I feel like, I mean, obviously Wes Craven, you know, he's made like a shit ton of good movies, mostly, you know, his best ones, Nightmare on Elm Street, Scream. But he's made like a lot of other really good ones in there that I feel are kind of like not all that talked about or not. And this is kind of one of them.
I'm going to say, you know, having not seen this one in a long, long time and forgotten all about it, not really walking away with it being all that impressed, seeing it now, I'm like, damn, I can't believe that I didn't appreciate this at the time. It's a great movie.
It definitely is. And it's one, I can see how, you know, if you're younger and you're not, It wasn't even really a typical horror movie for its time.
Right.
It was, like I said, it was much more serious, and it's almost kind of like an anthropological adventure mystery movie with horror elements on top of it.
Yeah.
Rather than being just like a straight up traditional horror movie. But
it's aged well.
It really has. I think it you know, it really plays just as well. And like I said, I liked it even better now than I did, like, when I saw it back in the old days.
I think it might play better now.
Yeah, it might.
Because, you know, I remember it being very ahead of its time in the way the storytelling, when everything was written out.
Yeah.
It was very weird when we saw it.
Yeah. I remember thinking it was weird.
It had an experimental feel to it.
It did.
At that time.
Like a little bit of an art house.
Right. But you look at it now, and it's actually just kind of like superior to a lot of the garbage that they make today. This, you could easily play this in the movie theater right now and get people to go see it.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, when they replayed Shining, people went to go see it. And
yeah, it was full.
They replayed Alien, the very first Alien, and it was great to see that on the big screen.
Yeah, I was really happy to see that.
There were like kids in their late teens going, "This movie is so scary. I never seen the movie." Dude, sit down, man. Sit down. Watch the movie. Weren't you traumatized by this movie when you were a kid? And I'm like, no, we were men back then, man. We were tough. You wouldn't traumatize me watching a damn movie, man. It's a movie, man. He was soyed the fuck out.
But you know,
You could play this today and people would enjoy it.
Now that I'm thinking about it, Serpent in the Rainbow, this has almost a Candyman kind of vibe.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Because it
has that anthropological urban legend.
I was thinking
type
that, but I didn't know. Maybe it was just because it had two black villains. I didn't know.
No, I thought, like I said,
there's something about the tone and the writing style of the damn
that's
movie.
What I mean. And I feel like because it had like an anthropological focus, I think is what I was thinking of. You know what I mean? Because in Candyman, where she was like, you know, she researched urban legends and she was like trying to figure out. So this is almost kind of like the same thing where he's going to like find this fucking.
We first heard about this when we were in high school, and it was other high school girls that recommended it to me and Steve. They were just saying that it was, and to us back then, it was like, it was like an experimental new movie, almost kind of like art house. And it was high tech in many ways in the way that they're telling the story, because you got to look at what was around at that time.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. Pretty simple stuff. Ghostbusters. That kind of stuff.
Although this was 4 years after Ghostbusters.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
So Ghostbusters would have been kind of like the standard for a Hollywood type movie.
You know? This was definitely not. I mean, even at the time when this came out in 1988, I think this only cost about $7 million to make, which was pretty low budget even for then. It didn't do badly at the box office, but I don't think it did as quite as well as they expected. I think it made about $19.5 million. So it made like twice its money back, which is usually like.
I think it was mostly a success on VHS.
Home run. I feel like it probably kind of, I mean, because Wes Craven was already, you know, like a big name by then because he'd already done Nightmare on Elm Street.
We rented it.
And he'd already, and you know, even back in the '70s, he did fucking Last House on the Left and all that. So. You know, I do feel like this is kind of maybe one of his lesser appreciated ones. It's not a lot like his other movies. You know what I mean? It's almost kind of like, I don't want to say it's, you know, it's like the odd one out, but I guess because it's based on a nonfiction work, it doesn't come across the same as a lot of his other movies.
I remember people going, oh, you got to see this one. It's a true story. That's what we were saying back then.
Yeah, I mean,
it's based on a true story. Right.
Kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, it is like that zombie powder shit is
one of
real.
That was one of the selling points, though, is that this is a true story.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like blurring, you know what I mean? Fantasy and fact were kind of blurring in those days when you're that young, you know?
I think the card at the beginning of the movie says inspired by true events.
Yeah.
I don't think it says this is a true story.
That was enough, though. When you were like 17, 18, that's enough. Okay.
It's true.
This
it
shit's
all
true.
Happened.
This shit's true. That's enough.
Not quite. Like I said, there was a lot of true shit in this, and they did use a lot of, you know, reality to kind of jump off of it, but you know what I mean? But yeah, so Shudder just added this probably like a week ago. They added a shit ton of Wes Craven movies, so we'll probably be doing another one in a couple weeks.
You got to see this one.
But yeah, this is definitely one of my favorite Wes Craven movies.
The only thing I don't like about the movie is the title. I don't really think that title fits it.
I always really liked that title. I always thought it was like very mysterious and evocative.
I think the tone is a little too fantasy. Sounds like something Sword and Sorcerer type stuff.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, like something with unicorns and guys with swords and shit. And a dragon.
Sword and a dragon. Yeah, just one, though.
Yeah, something like that. That's what it sounds like to me. It should have been called something else.
Yeah. I mean, like I said,
White Zombie would have been perfect because that's what it was. White dude turned into a zombie.
That's true. That would have been very straightforward. Yeah. but then everyone would have thought it was a remake of like the Bela Lugosi one.
Yeah. I think that's where they got the idea, though. Maybe that's where Bela Lugosi got the idea. No, I don't know because it happened after.
Yeah, I was going to say. That was like back in the fucking 1940s. Yeah. That was a long time ago. All right. So, yeah, if you have Shudder, they just added this as well as a couple of other Wes Craven movies, like two or three other ones, one of which we will probably be doing in a couple of weeks, but I'm not going to say which one. So you should definitely go check it out, especially, like I said, if you like real zombie movies, if you liked Angel Heart, if you like that type of stuff, then you will probably love this if you haven't seen it. So definitely go check it out.